Our next guest says that, unfortunately, sexual coercion in one form or another can be as American as the baseball metaphor about sex that almost everybody's heard. It's a metaphor that sees girls' limits as a challenge boys need to overcome.
Our guest says the release of this month's Trump tapes has us talking about sexual assault and what is and isn't locker room talk. And she says that makes it a good time to talk with boys and young men about consent, respect, and reciprocity.
Peggy Orenstein joins us now. She's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Girls and Sex, Navigating the Complicated New Landscape. She's a contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine. Peggy, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, that baseball metaphor, you started at that point in the piece we referred to. Talk about that as kind of summing up a lot of this conversation lately.
Yeah, it was really an amazing moment. I was sitting in on a sex ed class, a high school sex ed class, and they were talking about something. And, you know, I really believe in the capacity for teenagers to work this out together, boys and girls, and to, you know, that there's goodwill. And at one point, this boy who was an athlete, he was wearing a school jersey, raised his hand and he said, you know, that baseball metaphor for sex, in baseball, there's winners and losers. So who's the loser supposed to be during sex? And I felt that was such an amazing moment because, you know, it was a very small thing, but he really questioned that. And I thought that's going to make a difference in how he goes into his encounters from here on out. He's going to go in much more as a partner and much less as an adversary who, as you said earlier, sees girls' limits as a challenge that they're supposed to overcome.
And you're thinking about this more in the aftermath of the release of the Access Hollywood tapes, Donald Trump talking about what he can do without consent to women, and then later saying, oh, it was locker room talk. What was your reaction when you heard first the original quotes there from 10 or so years ago, and then the justification for them later?
Well, you know, in a certain way, I thought, well, here we are again. I mean, we have so many of these cases. They come up constantly. And I've been chronicling girls' lives and issues of sexuality for over 25 years. And, you know, whether it's going back to William Kennedy Smith or looking at Steubenville or Brock Turner more recently or Bill Cosby or Donald Trump, you know, we keep finding ourselves in the same place where we see these extreme and assault behaviors. And we tend to sort of demonize them as being, you know, having nothing to do with anything else, rather than looking at ways that maybe these are the very, very extreme and distorted end of a continuum that we need to address, that the locker room talk that he was talking about, you know, is not natural. It's not normal. You don't talk about assault, like it's a joke. And it is forming the way that boys think about masculinity, either in joining in or reacting against or staying silent.
A lot of your writing has focused on girls and young women and talking to them about sex and consent and the issues we're talking about. We need to talk, it sounds like, to boys at young ages through high school and beyond.
Yeah, you know, the girls and sex, I really started out wanting to look at what happened after Yes. You know, we were having this huge debate about sexual assault in the culture, but that was where the conversation was ending. And, you know, when there's a vacuum of information, the media and the internet come in and teach our kids for us. And I felt like if we really wanted our young people to engage safely, ethically, and enjoyably, whether they were, you know, engaging when they were teenagers or after they were married or whenever, we had to talk about what happened next. And so I went out to talk to girls about that and ended up with far more stories about coercion and assault than I had imagined I would. And after doing that for 3 years and writing the book, I realized that, you know, it's a dance between two people. And when we're talking about heterosexual encounters, to just talk about girls and what's going on with them was really only having half the conversation. So now I'm interviewing and talking to young men and writing a new book.
Talking to Peggy Orenstein about sex, consent, and the genders. She's the author of Girls and Sex, Navigating the Complicated New Landscape. So there's this template for young men. And as I was reading your piece, I was thinking of the song from Greece, Summer Love. And then you actually quoted it midway through.
You were thinking of it already?
Yeah. Because there's the line, and it seemed fun and wacky, I guess, back then. It's chilling, though, when you think about it.
Yeah.
Tell me more. Did she put up a fight?
Yeah.
So this is a long-accepted norm, almost, that there's expected to be resistance to be overcome mentally, emotionally, maybe physically. I mean, is that a long-term norm in American culture?
Absolutely. I mean, coercion is kind of baked into the process. Yeah, I saw that. They did Fox TV did a production of Grease Live a couple months ago, and I was watching it. And, you know, that's a family, it's a family musical. And they got to that line, and I just thought, what? I hadn't remembered that line, you know? But it's not even, I don't know. It's just seen as a sort of normal course of things that boys are supposed to push and girls are supposed to be the inertia that stops their, you know, unstoppable libido. And that's the way that we've presumed things to be. And that's the way that we see it in pop culture. And that's the way that they see it in internet porn. And, you know, one of the things that I really felt after writing about girls was that as little as we talk to young women about sexuality and consent and all these issues, we talk to young men less. And I felt that we were just sort of throwing them out there and expecting them to find their way and leaving them really to be educated by these old ideas and by the media and by the internet.
Yeah, when we talk about and to boys about sex, is the message mostly negative? Here's the bad thing, don't do that, but there's not a roadmap to positive masculinity when it comes to sex?
Yeah, you know, I think that what we used to say to boys is don't get a girl pregnant. And now a more modern parent will say, and by the way, don't rape her. But we don't talk about, so what, you know, again, what happens after yes? How do you negotiate a sexual relationship that, you know, one of the educators that I talked to in Girls and Sex talks about trying to guide teenagers towards making decisions that end in honor and integrity rather than guilt and shame. So, you know, how do we guide our kids, our boys and our girls, towards that goal, whether, again, they're engaging in an encounter that's going to last for 5 minutes or one that's going to be, you know, lasting for 50 years of their lives.
Is this a hard sell in a society where we're often reluctant to talk to maybe teens about sex at all, or maybe just, as you said, don't get somebody pregnant, don't get a disease, don't rape people, and that's it, that's the sex talk?
By the way, we don't say don't get a disease as much to boys as we should. We say that more to girls. But yeah, you know, I don't know. In writing about girls, I've been overwhelmed by how positively the book was received and how really hungry people were for this conversation around young women. I'll be really curious as I go through this process with boys to find out if there is an equal hunger and desire to talk about their half of the conversation and to question some of the norms of masculinity. And I don't know. I sure hope so, because I think that we're not serving our boys very well either right now.
You're in the midst of this project. You're talking to boys. Do they want to talk about this? Do you sense a hunger for boys to have this conversation, to have better information?
They do. You know, I mean, I am just sort of at the beginning, but I've been really touched by the young men that I've talked to. And I've, you know, sometimes they get sort of teary and, you know, and just talking about that idea of masculinity. One of the boys that I talked to, who I mentioned in the article, he was telling me how he worked at a bicycle shop in Northern California over the summer, and that all day long, he said the guys in the shop talked in an incredibly degrading way about women, and at the more G-rated, you know, broadcast-friendly end of that spectrum, they actually, I don't know if I can say this on air. I'll just use
the B word.
The B word. Yeah, The cafe down the street was staffed by young women, and they referred to it as the B word. And they would say, hey, you want to go get coffee at the B word? And he didn't engage with that. He didn't, you know, participate, but he also didn't say anything. And he said, you know, I put my head down and I just did my job. I was just there for the summer. And I totally got that on one level. But then on the other level, listening to the Trump tapes and thinking, how many guys on that bus who were laughing were really thinking, oh, God, get me out of here? You know, how many guys on that bus who said nothing were thinking they were the good guys because they weren't participating, but they also weren't challenging it?
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Door County. Jeff, hi.
Hey, how are you guys? Interesting conversation, and I think it's surprising, but maybe not, that this aspect of the election and the comments by a potential front runner, the impact it has on kids. As a teacher, the stuff that I hear kids talking about or the things that fill their head and they're not able to discern because they're kids is really, really important, and it's impactful, and no one's talking about it.
So, Jeff, are you saying you're hearing kids say things that they've heard in this presidential campaign race?
Well, they joke about what they heard, and, you know, I mean, I know that we're on the bus thing now, but, you know, earlier there was talk about the wall, and it's just, I guess the point I'm making is that the words of this individual, while as adults we can maybe kind of, you know, decide if it's just rhetoric or what, kids can't, and these kids, this stuff has an impact.
Thank you for the call, Jeff. Peggy, what are your thoughts? Does this have an impact on kids, on teens?
Yeah, I think, you know, it certainly does to see one of the people that is ostensibly the most respected in the land talking that way. It completely legitimizes it for young people. And I think it, you know, I'm always looking for sort of silver linings. And I think that the silver lining is that it gives us the opportunity to say, stop. We need to have a conversation with our children, not just one conversation, but many conversations about what it means to be respectful, about what it means to be a good citizen. And that includes being, you know, a good sexual citizen, being a good citizen in a relationship. What are our expectations for the way our kids behave, and recognizing that they are being bombarded, whether they're male or female, with sexualized images of women, with, you know, media that commercialize and distort sexuality, with internet porn, with all these things. And it's up to us as parents and as educators to both protect them and also help them sort those things out in a way that will allow them to treat their partners well.
We're talking with Peggy Orenstein. She's the author of the book Girls and Sex, Navigating the Complicated New Landscape. We're talking more about boys and sex and the national conversation we're having about issues of sex and consent, in part in the wake of the Donald Trump Access Hollywood tapes.
And we want to know what you think. What kind of conversation are you having with your sons and daughters about issues of sex and consent today? How do we change the cultural standard of boys pushing for more and girls trying to set limits? And what does it mean to be a man when it comes to sexual ethics? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Peggy Orenstein stays with us. She's the author of the book Girls and Sex, Navigating the Complicated New Landscape, working on a new book on boys and sex. We're talking about how to tell boys what it means to be a man when it comes to issues of sex and consent, partly prompted by the Donald Trump Access Hollywood tapes.
And we want to know what you think. What kind of talks are you having with your sons and daughters about issues of sex and consent? How do we change the cultural standard of boys pushing for more and girls trying to set limits? And what works when it comes to teaching boys and girls about what it means to be a man? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Peggy, I wanted to get back to something you said earlier about, I guess, kind of assumptions about from boys based on what they've heard from others about how they behave in a situation. If they're in that room with other boys talking about sex, they have assumptions about what everybody else thinks. That might be the worst, and maybe they just keep egging each other on in a way, building up that talk and maybe ultimately leading to negative action. Can you talk about the peer pressure side?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, and it's not just the talk, but it's the silence around the talk. And what has been shown in research is that when nobody challenges that kind of discussion, that it's presumed not that the people disapprove, but that they actually agree. And so silence actually perpetuates the behavior. And, you know, I think it also cuts down on what we're really trying to build right now, which is bystander action when assaults do occur. So particularly on college campuses, when there's something going down at a park, the idea that somebody would step in and challenge it and say, hey, wait a minute, is undermined when we think that, oh, well, you know, it's okay just to engage in this so-called locker room talk and talk smack about girls in locker room. And, you know, and then, you know, on the other issue is it is completely devalues the experience of gay boys as well.
Let's go back to our callers now. Harvey is with us in Boyd. Harvey, hi.
Hi. How's your day going?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
I guess I wanted to know if with the Donald Trump videos and whatnot, if the author thinks that it started well before that, or if this is kind of the beginning of that acceptance and talk and whatnot.
Peggy, you're not saying that the Donald Trump things started? No.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And in fact, I say very overtly in the piece that these episodes keep coming up with either people in power or with boys, you know, talking about Steubenville or talking about the Glen Ridge rapes in New Jersey or talking about the Spur Posse in Lakeland, California, that there's a tendency when these horrific acts occur or Brock Turner to sort of distance ourselves from them and say, you know, not our boys, not our sons. And obviously, that's true on one level. You know, it's not representative behavior of boys by any means. At the same time, if we only have this line in the sand where, you know, if you commit an assault, you know, then it's a problem. It's not enough, and we really have to talk to boys. And this is a long overdue conversation. And it's not that Donald Trump is the first person to do this. It's that this gives us a new opportunity to talk to boys about the whole spectrum of consent, of coercion, of assault.
When this issue comes up as kind of a general systemic issue, I think there's a certain defensiveness that comes up out there. There's the hashtag not all men for a while, where the idea is, okay, if you bring this up, you're accusing all men of, in effect, being potential rapists. That's not where you're coming from either, though, it sounds like.
Yeah, that makes me kind of tired, to be honest. No, you know, what I am saying is that I think it's pretty obvious when we look at the way that kids learn sexual behavior, that they do learn that boys are supposed to push. And I saw this all the time with the girls that I was interviewing for Girls in Sex, that they would talk about, you know, middle school. And it's complicated. You know, they talk about middle school dances where this first started happening and boys would come up behind them and you know, what they call grind, which is when they the boys push their genitals up against the girls' rear ends while the girls are facing the other way. And the girls, sometimes they, you know, they wanted that. Sometimes they liked that. But they had all learned at a certain point over time to, you know, to artfully disengage from that if they needed to without offending the boy. And they were always, to a girl that I spoke with, they were always extremely worried about hurting boys' feelings, even when the boys weren't worried about, you know, the reverse. And the girls always, one of the big issues with girls is that they want to know how to say no without being seen as mean or being seen as the B word, or, you know, how do they disengage and leave the guy's ego intact?
But no reciprocal concern from the boy in that equation.
No, and you know, we pretty much accept the idea that, and again, I'm not saying this because boys are bad. I'm not saying this because boys are all, you know, rapists, nothing like that, obviously. I mean, that would be ridiculous. That would be absurd. But we do, you know, we do engage in a dynamic, and we encourage kids to engage in a dynamic in which, you know, boys pressure and girls concede. And I always think back when I was a kid to that. Remember that I don't know how old you are, but remember that Meatloaf song, Paradise by the
Dashboard Light?
Yeah, and they have that sports narration in the middle of it, which actually is a real sportscaster, I guess, a real baseball game, where he's, you know, he's going, holy cow, he's going to steal a base, you know, all these things. And it's overtly comparing sex to baseball and the boy to I think the girl in that metaphor is not actually the opposing team. I think she's the field on which the game is played.
Talking to Peggy Orenstein about boys, girls, sex, and consent. Back to our callers now with Deborah in Milwaukee. Deborah, hi.
Hi. You know, hi, Peggy. And this is a great topic that needs to be talked about. And I wonder why we don't teach kids sexual education when they are young. I mean, my son, when he went to German immersion school in the fourth grade, I saw this consent form. I'm like, what? They're teaching sex education in the fourth grade? At that point, they're like on a whole different level. But if you teach it to them like a medical student learns it, when they're very young, they'll grow up realizing, well, a penis is a penis and a breast is a breast, and it's part of your human body. It's not, but now it's just so the pornography, it just disgusts me that this is how kids are learning about sex.
And Deborah, thanks for the call. Peggy, start earlier, she's saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a great book that I always recommend called From Diapers to Dating that is how to talk about sexual issues and consent issues to your child from the get-go, which is, by, you know, from the beginning, name, just as the caller said, naming proper parts. It's not, you know, you wouldn't tell somebody that their elbow is called their hoo-ha. You know, you have to name the names and moving on from there and talking about it in a way that's developmentally appropriate to kids and understanding what they're asking and what they're not asking. So yeah, I think it's, you know, and it's also that we tend to put sex and sex education in this silo that's off to the side, and so then becomes really like scary and embarrassing to talk about, instead of integrating ideas about consent and how we treat people and how we think about relationships, just like we integrate all kinds of conversations about how we treat friends, about bullying, about all of these things. They're all part of being, of teaching our kids how to be decent human beings in the world.
Peggy, briefly, as we wrap up, are you hopeful, are you optimistic that this isn't just maybe a teachable moment, but a moment that could be extended into an ongoing conversation?
You know, I am. And that's, I mean, I think that we've been seeing that around girls and around issues of consent on campus. And it's what I'm really seeing in going around talking about girls and sex. And I'm really hopeful that by the time I publish Boys and Sex, that we'll be ready for that conversation, too.
Peggy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Peggy Orenstein. She's the author of the book Girls and Sex, Navigating the Complicated New Landscape. As you heard, she's in the midst of research for a book on boys and sex. Her piece on masculinity, sexual assault, and consent that prompted this piece was in the New York Times Magazine. We've got a link to that on the Central Time Facebook page. You can have a look at it and share your thoughts with us on the Facebook page.